everybody, it's Matt Lee from CanucksHockeyBlog.com, and on behalf of Chris Golden and Clayton Emo, welcome to the C4CHB podcast. It's the 25th episode, and we've got a great show ahead for you guys. We're going to get right into the goaltending situation with Jacob Markstrom now toiling away in Utica. What happens now with Ryan Miller and Eddie Lack? As well, we're going to talk about the Canucks' newest additions, Radim Verbata and Nick Bonino. Are they going to be able to replace the void left behind by Ryan Kesler? And is it Bo Horvat's time? Everyone wants to know. With Jacob Markstrom now in Utica, that opens up a spot for Bo Horvat to now impress. It's all coming up on the 25th episode of the C4CHB podcast.
Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Well, gentlemen, here we have preseason action in play, and Ryan Miller has found his way to the ice. He's got his first game under the belt. Didn't look entirely happy in my mind, but he put in some solid results, saving all 7 shots that found their way to his net in approximately 30 minutes of ice time.
What do you mean he didn't look happy? Like, he looked grumpy?
Well, you know, I think I've gotten so accustomed to laid-back Luongo that you look at Ryan Miller, and sure, we've only seen him 30 minutes, but he looks serious.
He looks... I mean, this is a guy who wants to endear himself to the fans as quickly as possible, I think. So I think Ryan Miller wants to be as business as usual as it gets. I think this is a guy who has a lot to prove as well, mind you. He's, again, far removed from his Vezina Trophy status from back in 2011 or whatever the heck it was. And he didn't look good with St. Louis in the playoffs last year. So there are a lot of people who want to know, is Ryan Miller still an elite-level goaltender? And I think with the focus that you saw from him on Friday night, he wants to show that he is back, he is for real, and that people need to take him seriously once again as an elite-level goaltender.
Well, something that I actually found interesting in a conversation that he had had, and I can't remember which reporter it was who had asked him the question, but he had said that Vancouver is not the exclusive market to goaltender controversy. In fact, he said that every market he's ever lived in, he's been compared to the next, or the goaltender of the past. So Buffalo would be a great example. Is
Dominic Hasek.
Dominic Hasek. He continued to be compared to Hasek. And there was always this controversy because he always had Hasek's ghost behind him. No different than how 94 ingratiated Kirk McLean to Canucks fans so that forevermore, Kirk McLean was the best goaltender who'd never win a Vezina in our eyes. And I wonder if maybe that's not a bad thing for him to feel that way.
I wonder who he compared himself to or was compared to in St. Louis. Darren Pang? Roman Turek?
Who else is there?
I don't know.
Like, I'm trying to think.
Grant Fuhr?
Well, Grant Fuhr, we could go, didn't...
Okay, we're getting far off topic.
What's
anyway.
His name from Flames days? Vernon? Didn't Vernon have a spell
Mike
there?
Vernon didn't play in St. Louis, did he?
I don't know. I know he played in Detroit at one point, I think.
No, I think it was just Calgary, Detroit, and San Jose for Mike Vernon, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah,
anyhow. Okay, either way. Sorry.
The thing that I did like, though, is that he did seem to be business as usual. I'm not entirely sure how well Rolly Melanson will appreciate. Yeah, I know. I got the names mixed up. And Matt Rolly's his eyes. Try the chicken. I'm here all week. I don't entirely know how well that him playing as aggressive will suit the goaltending coach's mind, considering I believe Melanson preaches that deep in the blue.
Well, by being deep in the blue, he made that save, that very first save. You know, I remember when Luongo first got here, I think it was either in the first preseason game or the first regular season game that Luongo ever played. I believe he led it in his first shot ever that he faced. So, sure
really?
Enough.
I don't remember that.
No, I'm going to try and look it up.
But I remember his very... Okay, yeah. Since we're talking about sure. it anyway. Roberto Luongo's very first game with the Vancouver Canucks in 2006. It was after the 1 year after the lockout, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was against Detroit he was playing, if I'm not mistaken. It was a CBC game. And I remember hearing Jim Houston, who by the way, was on CKNW last night with me on Sports Weekend, if you didn't notice.
Sorry, what was that?
Jim Houston, who was with me on the CKNW.
Who else was
Sports
on
Weekend?
Who else was on with you?
Oh, yeah, a couple duds named Chris Golden and Clay Emo, by the way. Woo. Anyway, yes, I am a company man. It was Jim Houston who said, great save, Luongo. I don't remember. I don't think he let in a goal.
Okay, I'll look it up. But anyways,
okay.
Ryan Miller, preseason, sure enough.
You're getting so sidetracked. This is a dud of a podcast so far.
It was
so
a 2-1-1. I think it was a Ham Hughes gaffe already. And sure enough, Sam Bennett comes in, makes a nice little move, and Miller... I don't know if it is actually ended up being a stick or his right pad, but he made a wonderful save because he was deep in the blue, and it was a nice start. Because can you imagine what would have happened if he let that first goal in, preseason albeit? But the fans would have just got on him, I think.
Do you think the fans wouldn't have let him forget that either, too? Because obviously the fans here in Vancouver with goaltending can be very unforgiving.
Oh, it's news to me.
The thing to keep in mind, though, and this is I'm going to use a segue, is Melanson does preach that sort of controlled mechanics, and look at all the time and effort he spent with that goaltender named Markstrom, who saw barely any ice time this preseason, and finds his way on his way to Utica, which blows my mind that not one team in the NHL would go and take a flyer on a player like that for free.
You know what blows my mind is that we had heard that there were as many as four teams interested in Markstrom from, quote, insiders, and no one made a claim?
So the four teams, did you see who was reporting the four teams who had interest?
No, who was it?
Mr. McGuire.
Okay.
And I find that Pierre McGuire, I'm not talking, he's inside. He's got far more connections than I ever
will
have.
You're really burning the bridge of getting Pierre McGuire on the C4 podcast.
Pierre, if you're listening, you're a fantastic guy. I just, you know.
Thank you.
Have a... disagreement.
You make my job harder when we start bashing people.
Okay.
Okay, but anyway.
Well, the point being is that I thought he was the only one that was reporting, but it's not that I actually would have found what he was reporting on to be or lack credibility. Because
you think it was more of a hunch he was going off of?
No, I think he probably had four teams that were saying, yeah, we're interested. Because to me, there should have been at least four teams interested. There should have been more.
Who do you think was interested? Edmonton?
Maybe, but...
Who's the backup in Calgary right now?
Well, Hiller's there.
Kari Ramo?
I don't know if Calgary would have been the team to make a lay, but not to say that they wouldn't. I mean, why not go and pick this kid up?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're overselling Jacob Markstrom a little bit, but like we've talked about extensively on this podcast, it's not like he's chopped liver. There was a time when Jacob Markstrom was considered a top flight, elite level goaltending prospect that just wasn't playing in the NHL. And like I mentioned a couple days ago on CKNW, this is a guy who's only 24 years old. Corey Schneider is 28 now. He didn't get his first look as an elite-level NHL starting goaltender until he was 25, 26.
But we all know that goaltenders don't quite mature until they hit their late 20s, early 30s. So I'm not necessarily underselling Markstrom. I think maybe, to your words, we're maybe overselling him. But he's blue chip. There's potential here.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't understand why teams wouldn't want to take a flyer on him. I mean, it could be a situation where, you know, there were just... too many teams that didn't have their own roster problems figured out. And this actually goes against what you and I talked about last week, Chris, when I suggested that maybe they would hang on to Markstrom until maybe a month into the season when teams have figured out their roster. Well, we didn't think about the possibilities that if a team has figured out their roster, maybe they do have room for Markstrom. So maybe in the amidst all this chaos with roster issues, the Canucks thought best to waive Markstrom now and trying to get him to go down to Utica.
It's the timing. You brought that up, just like you mentioned. It's the timing that sneak them through when teams aren't necessarily looking for the goaltender. There are no significant injuries in the crease quite yet. And the teams that have been in the goaltending market forevermore are maybe interested in finding the goaltender that pushes them over the edge, which Markstrom is still a project, no matter how you look at it. Even if he had a Vezina season and got himself the Calder to boot, the likelihood of either of those happening is few and far between.
Imagine if Markstrom got picked up by the Florida Panthers.
Well, but that was actually, rumor was, one of the teams that was interested.
Backing up
Roberto
Luongo.
I could have seen it. That would just be one more final twist of the knife in the Roberto Luongo saga, wouldn't it?
And that would mean, if let's say Florida had picked up Markstrom, that would mean that the Vancouver Canucks sent Luongo and Stephen Anthony to Florida.
Oh, gave up Stephen Anthony, too?
For Matthias. And we kept a portion of Luongo's contract. So, really, the only thing that you could just even grasp that the Canucks got out of that deal would have been the fact that Luongo's contract was no longer on the books, which is kind of what we're playing with right now.
I don't know. The whole situation is just yet another bizarre twist in the goaltending situation with Vancouver. I mean, you know, I feel like this whole Luongo-Schneider thing, this thing could follow us for years.
Well, speaking of goaltending, I think it was Botchford that was reporting that there was interest for Lack to go to Winnipeg. That there was some serious consideration.
Like on Lack's part? Or
No. Lack gets traded to Winnipeg.
He doesn't have a no trade, right?
No, he doesn't.
Of course he doesn't.
So, let's, you know, as the merry-go-round continues to circle, let's say Lack did get traded to Winnipeg. The only reason...
For Vander Kane.
Well, that's... Who else would Vancouver Canucks
want?
Well,
I mean, they'd have to give him more than Lack, but...
Sure enough, but still.
Horvat.
Yeah. You want to send Bo Horvat and Eddie Lack?
I don't know. I'm spitballing here.
Shinkarik, Vertanen, McKinnon. Let's send them all.
I don't know. Would you put it past GM Jim Benning at this point?
Open up the cupboard and send all the players.
Okay, the other question I don't know the answer to, and you guys might know this, and I think I've read it, but I'm not 100% sure. Is Jacob Markstrom subject to re-entry waivers, or is that gone?
Re-entry's gone. Re-entry
That's gone, yeah, with the lockout, right?
Yeah, gone with the CBA. The only way you go, hit waivers is on the way down, not the way back up.
So, hypothetically, if the Canucks like what they see from Markstrom in Utica, and he looks like he could be, again, a backup goaltender in the NHL, and like you said in the summer, Chris, if Eddie Lack's stock has been boosted up once again and he's the more tradable asset of the two, what is stopping them from trading him to, say, Winnipeg, like you said, who are sort of on pins and needles with Andrei Pavlich as their starting goaltender? That's, I mean, this could be one giant elaborate plot from GM Jim Benning on his roster wall.
Maybe that's, he's got like a little mark beside his name.
I feel like we should be playing that brrr from Inception right now.
But it's crazy. I remember we brought it up a couple of times and we talked about, is it a chance that maybe Lack will be the one that moved? And I was like, no, that's crazy, especially after last year keeping him over Luongo and everything. But, you know, you paint a very conceivable picture, Matt, in that, you know, we can't underestimate Benning's wherewithal and his intelligence. And he might indeed have a master plan, get Lack some good games in the preseason, get Lack some good time early in the season. And who knows? It'd be crazy.
You know what, though? When I hear the words master plan, I keep thinking of Mike Gillis. Remember when he said, we have a plan for this guy?
Well, Mike,
we have a plan. We hatched a plan a few years ago to trade Corey Schneider for a first-round pick.
But I actually, having spoken to Bruce Dowigan in the last episode, I don't actually find that as far-fetched.
Wait, what did we do?
We spoke to Bruce Dowigan.
On the CHP podcast?
That's right.
And he's the author of?
Ice Storm, which is something or other about the Vancouver Canucks rise and fall.
And I will say,
the greatest Canucks team in history.
After listening to that podcast, although I was sad I wasn't able to join you guys, had to take care of some family business, but the very first thing I did is I went on Amazon and I bought his book. And
you did buy his book.
And I get it on Wednesday.
I picked mine up yesterday.
Dang, where'd you get it?
Amazon.
I'm a lot cheaper than you guys. I'm hoping that a copy arrives at CKNW and I get it for free.
Well, Chris will just read it to you every night or something.
Yeah, maybe. I'll just whisper sweet nothings to your ear.
Thank you.
But before we go and take this podcast further off the rails, back to my point, having spoken to Bruce, I used to think it was ad lib. It was just a matter of Mike Gillis saying, we have a plan, because that was what he was taught to say. I actually think he had a plan for everything. Like, it's like he flipped open the page to the player or the team or the situation, and there was a plan written down saying, here's what we're going to do, if then, else, or what.
All right. Let's talk Radim Vrbata.
Is Radim?
Is it Radim or Radim?
I go with Radim, but on a completely unrelated note, apparently Nicholas Jensen is now saying that because he's in North America, we can call him Nicholas Jensen.
I've been calling him Jensen this whole time.
No, but apparently it's Jensen.
But I've been calling him Jensen.
Because that's what we do in North America. And in a conversation when he was asked, oh, is it Jensen or Jensen? He's like, oh, it's Jensen. But here, call me Jensen.
I heard that too.
Well, don't forget, Nicholas Jensen, since we're talking about it again, man, this podcast is really falling off the rails.
Hey, let's start talking about Hodgson and Hodgson.
Anyway... we're just going to scrap this podcast.
It is Matt Lee, right? Yeah. Lee. Okay.
Anyway, I assume because Nicholas Jensen was pretty much raised in Canada, it would always be Jensen. I mean, it says his passport says Denmark, but he was raised in Canada with his father who played North American pro hockey here. So that's why I assume it was always Jensen. Just like how Parise, it's now Parise, right?
Poshizi.
Oh, my G.
You don't see it, but I'm shaking my head in disgust right now. Back to the point at hand, Radim or Radim. By the way, can we start a petition about Radim the Dream as a nickname?
Radim the Dream.
Oh, I can't wait till he gets announced to come on the ice. Radim the Dream Verbata.
It does sound good, and it does sound good coming from your illustrious voice, Chris. Radim Verbata. He looked good. You saw the highlights. Seven shots. He could have had a lot more. He said even in the post game that he looked like he was going to break the preseason record for most shot attempts in a game. I mean, I know it was a bare-bones Calgary roster, but what do you guys think of Radim Verbata as a fixture with the Sedin Twins this year?
An absolute fixture, as permanent as Matt, Chris, and Clay on this podcast. But seriously, he fits in like he's the third Sedin. He's great on the wall. He's great passing. He's great cycling. A decent enough skater. You know, he's not going to win any Lady Bing or any... No, not Lady Bing. What's the one for the defense?
Selke.
Yeah, he's not the like the most...
Yeah, you can't spell Selke without Kessler.
Hey, nicely done. But I thought he was very good. And it's
Don't
funny.
Mention Kessler's name around here again, okay?
My bad.
Also dead to the podcast.
In his first game, Verbata, I think a lot of people were bugging him about passing too much. Like, and he was supposed to be into mm-hmm. the shooter. But you saw how that quickly changed in his last game. I think first period, he still tried a couple cute little passes to Henrik and Daniel. And then he just said, forget it. Every time I get it, I'm just going to put it on the net. And yeah, you're right. Seven shots on net. I think 12 in total he had actually attempted.
Okay, I'm not going to disagree that Verbata looks good, and he's looked good so far this preseason, but aren't we being a premature by saying, oh my goodness, we found the third Sedin?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've said that so many times. I mean, we could run down the list of people, Jason King, Jan Boulis, Trent Klatt, guys who
Anson
have been...
Anson Carter.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Anson Carter. But a
David
list
Booth
of guys,
never got a good chance.
Yeah, but he didn't look like the third Sedin.
But these are guys who all have been experimented with the Sedins, but you have to admit, from what you saw from Radim Verbata, he looked good. He does the simple things right, which is what you appreciate. Again, like you said, he's not going to look to make passes to the Sedins. He's looking to score goals. That's why he was brought here. And he finds open ice like so uncanny. It's uncanny his ability to find open ice. It looked like every time he got the puck, there was not a defender around him. That's what I appreciate about Radim Verbata's game. And I think, I'm spitballing here, but I think Verbata will be a huge asset for the Canucks in boosting their power play this season.
Yeah, he's kind of flown under the radar too when you think about the summer. The summer where, you know, we talked about the signing of Ryan Miller, and we talked about the big trade, Kessler and Bonino and Spezza and all those. But then Verbata kind of came in about a week later, and I think it was kind of quiet, kind of under the radar, but I think that's great. It's almost suitable for his game. But you're right, Matt. I see him as he's also a very efficient skater. He doesn't, like, flail. He doesn't look all crazy. He's not the fastest guy ever, but kind of like the Sedins, he's just very efficient with his action. And, yeah, a couple times he's wound up for that one-timer from the right face-off circle, and he looks great with that right-handed shot.
Well, and as we know, right-handed shots just have to keep their stick on the ice, and the Sedins will bounce the puck in off of it. It's why I'd never be successful with the Sedins. I'm a lefty.
That's the only reason why.
So we're going to talk a little Bo Horvat, Clay?
Yeah, let's talk Bo Horvat. So as the roster got pared down to a mere 25 players now, they got to get down to...
23.
Yeah, you're welcome. So thank you. So I believe they're at 27 right now because they got to make four more cuts. They got 15 forwards. They got 8D. And they got three goals. Okay, we're at 26 or 27. But anyways, he has a chance, you guys, to be maybe the 12th, 13th, 14th forward. What do you guys think? You know, a month ago we talked about maybe, maybe not, and he's going to have to beat out some good guys. But some of those veterans haven't really impressed in preseason.
Here's the thing. I didn't think Bo Horvat would make this roster when we were floating the idea or the notion of the Vancouver Canucks starting the season with three goaltenders. Because Jacob Markstrom, like we said, would take up an extra roster spot that could have been allocated to another forward. Now that that has changed, there is the possibility, a very real possibility in my mind, that Bo Horvat will start the year in Vancouver. He's going to get at least 9 games, which is the limit you need before you burn off a year of his deal. And then we're going to find out. Essentially, this move... And it's a calculated risk, again, by sending Markstrom down and risking him to waivers. This move buys GM Jim Benning and Willie Desjardins some time to figure out if Bo Horvat is the real deal. What do you guys think?
I'm conflicted. I have no problem if Horvat makes the team and plays a few games without burning a year of eligibility. In fact, I think Horvat and Shinkarak are both, you know, in that realm of burning some games away. But that's where we were last year. I mean, it was the same point. Wasn't Horvat the penultimate day of preseason, and then Shinkarik followed the day after? And I don't see how putting them upstairs in the press box gives them experience. I get that it shows them the game and they get to be around the team and learn what it's like to be a professional. And they may see some ice time. But from a developmental perspective, would it not be better for Horvat to go back to junior? And I know that there's nothing more for him to prove, but get either play for or get traded to a competitive team that's going to go and fight for the Memorial Cup.
Is it possible, you guys, that Bo Horvat and Hunter Shinkarik are fighting for the same roster spot?
It's possible.
On my roster, I have Sestito as the 13th and Bo Horvat as the 14th.
With Shinkarik not in those.
Shinkarik is in Utica at that point.
Where's you got Matthias on the ice?
I have Matthias on the ice.
Okay.
Is that 14?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You have Matthias and Dorsett and and Richardson.
Those guys are all regulars in my lineups.
Because, you know, for tonight's preseason game, I should say, you know what's interesting? Is I heard that Horvat, Shinkarik, and Jensen are going to play on the same line. And you could argue that those are the three guys that are battling for one roster spot.
Okay, so let's say those are the three that play on the line. Who gets bumped? Because just going back to something Jim Benning had said in August, and he went along to saying, if guys come in and show they deserve to be on the team, then I'll move somebody to make room for them. But it's going to be earned, not given. And I'd like to think Bo Horvat, with his play so far, has acquitted himself quite well. He doesn't have the flash that maybe we would want him to have, but he's played a very solid game, he's made very few mistakes, and he skates the entire length of the ice. He's playing both sound offensively as well as defensively. And if you got a young kid who doesn't hurt you, you sometimes have to take that jump or that leap of faith.
And the other thing that you failed to mention is physically, he looks ready for the NHL. Mm-hmm. He has NHL size, not unlike Nicholas Jensen, who also has some NHL size to him, but Hunter Shinkarik, physically, in my mind, not ready for the NHL. The other thing is here, this rule is so stupid, isn't it? I mean, we're entertaining the idea of deciding to keep Bo Horvat up because he's younger than Hunter Shinkarik and Nick Jensen?
No, but the rule is there for a reason. It's to ensure that junior teams don't get raided by NHL clubs.
But he's already played like three full seasons with the London Knights already.
No, no doubt. But that it really comes down to the fact that he's got a late birthday.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, you have to draw that line. Let's say we draw the line so that it was the start of the year so that he could go and play in Utica. Then the argument would be, oh, geez, these young kids, these 17 and 18-year-olds who, you know, they look like they're NHL already. They need to go and step it up. I'm kind of concerned that maybe rushing them into Utica doesn't make much sense because he is still young.
Don't you look at Utica as an upgrade over junior for a lot of these kids?
It's an upgrade, but he's now going to be playing amongst men.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you are built like an adult, you are not an adult.
But we've just talked about Bo Horvat and talked about we're pumping his tires, talking about how we think physically and, you know, two-way hockey skills there. We think he's ready.
Well, I'm giving you reasons why I think he's ready, but I will be the first one to concede that I'm not entirely sure a young kid who we've placed significant expectations upon is the type of person we want to go and put on the flames and ultimately make or break through, trial by fire.
Flat out, would you take Bo Horvat on your roster over Sean Matthias? Because that's what I'm looking at, quite frankly. Sean Matthias doesn't do anything for me.
Based on what we've seen this preseason, or just based on overall?
Everything.
You know what? I feel like, and we get one every year, we get a guy who is the team's whipping boy all season. And I feel like that guy is going to be Sean Matthias this year.
Really?
Well,
last year was David Booth. You were there, Clay.
Yeah, I know.
But Matthias is the whipping boy because he came for Luongo.
It's not just that, though. I think Matthias teases you with his size and his skill that he does possess, but he hasn't found a way in his NHL career thus far to put it all together. So I think he leaves you wanting more. And I think that is, as a result, why he's going to be the whipping boy for Willie Desjardins and for a lot of fans on the Canucks roster this year.
But let's say he comes in a trade for a third liner. Does he get whipped? No. We just go and look, it's a serviceable player that we brought in, did his thing, maybe didn't give us what we all expected, but did enough to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
Because he comes from Luongo, we want him to be Wayne Gretzky.
I don't know. I mean, again, if we're labeling Sean Matthias as the Canucks' whipping boy of 2014-15 and we're proclaiming Bo Horvat as the golden boy for 2014-15. I think that tells you what I think of the roster. I think there is the possibility Bo Horvat can replace Sean Mathias. Do I think it will happen? No, because I'm confident that Sean Mathias can find some way to put it together to at least be a niche third, fourth line player, to answer your question, Clay.
Okay, so I figured this out. You know, I got my math straight. Right now, there are 17 forwards left, there are 8 defensemen left, and there are 3 goalies left. That includes Erickson, of course, with Miller
and Lack.
Oh,
wow, he's still here,
right? Yeah, so we have 28 guys. We got to get down to 23 in the next week. So using everything that we just talked about, if we talk about those 17 forwards, O'Reilly's still up here somehow.
He'll be
okay,
right.
So he's one. And then conceivably then, Matt, you would think then that Jensen and Shinkarik are going down to leave you with Horvat as your 14th, with Cicito, 13 and 14,
yeah.
Correct?
And we're also assuming Erickson is gone
yes,
down as well,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And so then is that 23 we're at?
Yeah, and then one of those D-men, either between Corrado, Weber, or...
I think Corrado goes.
Yeah, so then and then you're down, you're 23, your opening night roster.
So you're saying Horvat stays up?
I do.
I mean, we talked about this a few minutes ago. I think Horvat is the guy who will get a 9-game trial. He buys Benning and Desjardins time to see if he's the real deal. And after 8 or 9 games, they decide, you know what, he's not ready. We'll send him back down to London. That's what they'll do.
Okay, so let's say that occurs. Who comes up to fill his spot?
Mathias.
No, Mathias is on your team.
That's what I'm saying. He comes out so Horvat can play. Is that what you're asking?
Oh. No, I'm asking. I'm working under the world that Horvat doesn't last beyond the 9 games.
Goes down. So who comes up if anyone?
Oh,
then isn't Jensen? That Shinkarik or Jensen, right?
Yeah.
And see, this is where I'm wondering if Cicito might not be the odd man out. And I'm not saying that they send Cicito on his way, but look at the way the Canucks are constructed. As such, it doesn't occur to me that Cicito's role can't be served by
Dorsett?
A Derek Dorsett.
Yes. Absolutely. And I 100% agree.
And I'm not knocking Cicito, just that I think Dorsett provides more options than Cicito does.
And this is going to sound really bad for Tom Cicito, but Tom Cicito, in my mind, was more of a John Tortorella guy than he mm-hmm. is a Willie Desjardins guy.
And look at the way that Desjardins wants to play, too. I think
he was very bullish on using Tom Cicito a lot in the preseason as well, if you recall from this past week.
I just look at the way the Canucks are playing. I know it's preseason. I know... They'd be playing against Calgary, so it's not like the best example, but they seem faster, they seem more aggressive, they seem faster on the puck, and Cicito doesn't do any of those things.
No, and you look at that sort of, I mean, it's a, Desjardins preaches that 200 feet of ice. You play both defensively and offensively, and that those words have echoed the entire arena since Trevor Linden took over, because, I mean, how many times has he told the story that Pat Quinn told me that there's no reason why you can't have good defense and give up offense at the same time. In fact, one builds to the other. But let's say Cicito is that odd man out. Let's say Cicito does find himself no longer in a Canucks uniform. That then could mean that you would have a Shinkarik and a Horvat for the start of the season, conceivably, which I think Canucks fans would just lose their stuff over.
All right. Well, we've discussed at length what we think of this roster. We're going to take a 30-second timeout. We're going to get into half full, half empty right after this.
Start worrying about the Vancouver Canucks and stop worrying about us.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hey, if I saw myself in clothes like those, I'd have to kick my own ass.
Bueller.
Somebody get refs like Auger tonight. He's taking it personal.
The problem is there's a number of scumbags that work in that industry, and those maggots screw it up for everybody else, and it's that simple.
I'm not the first guy to do it. I'm not the last guy to do it. I'm not sorry that I did it.
You have a problem? Turn off your station.
You can't be serious. You cannot be serious.
But that was a cheap shot by a young kid.
He's an idiot.
This isn't rock bottom. I don't know what is.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
All right, guys. The other thing I want to bring up, because I was going to do it before, but then I didn't because I'm very unorganized right now. Second line. There's a number of possibilities that can be thrown around here. But let's assume Radim Vrbata plays with the Sedins and he stays there. Who do you have on your second line? And I know we've talked about it before, but there's been some circumstances in preseason that have changed my line of thinking.
I'm going to guess you take Cassian off of that second line.
You would be correct.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't impressed that
He's been
much.
A little hurt. I will say that.
Okay.
But.
So I'm guessing, Matt, that you still have Bonino as your center. You still have Burrows on one side. And you move Chris Higgins up.
No.
Oh, that's what I would do. What do you got? Okay, he's kind of thinking about something. What do you got, Chris?
I look at Cassian. I'm just going to, as soon as you bring him up, mention this. Watching that game on Friday, Cassian played his way to the fourth line. Why is that interesting? Richardson hurts himself and is out of the game early. 10 minutes or so to go in the third, and Dorsett finds his way an early exit. Cassian does not get off the fourth line. You're down two forwards. That doesn't bode well for a player in my mind.
All right. Well, I'll tell you who I have.
Finally.
I got Lyndon Vay as my second line right winger.
Okay.
And I know that I could be regretting this later, but... Oh, there it is. That was me eating crow, possibly. You like that?
He took about 2 minutes to set that up.
Hey, you know what? My clips are running slow, okay? There it goes.
Okay, fine. Then who are your other centers then?
Well, I got Lyndon Vay as my right winger. I have Sean Mathias, I think, centering my third line. And then I have Brad Richardson centering my fourth line.
Nope. No, I'm just kidding. I just don't see it. I don't see it.
You know what, though? And I say all this because I like what I've seen so far from Lyndon Vay in the first couple preseason games. I think he's got a nose for the net. I think he's a responsible guy who's a natural center. And I think he could be okay at right wing.
The good thing about what you're saying, Matt, is actually it gets him away from what we heard a lot about, especially when playing away against some of the big centers in our conference and especially in our division. And, you know, with a coach that matches up with the last change on home ice, he might want to try and get, for example, a Getzlaff or Kessler up against Lyndon Vay in the middle. So that you make a good point. If you put him on the wing, then he's less of a liability defensively. He's been wonderful offensively, obviously, with 4 points already in 2 games in the preseason. But, yeah, his defensive work hasn't been stellar yet.
What did you do to Nick Bonino?
I have Vay on the right side. Of Bonino and Burrows, sorry.
Okay,
that might not have been clear.
You had said center.
I know he's a natural center, but I'm saying he could be a good fit on the right wing.
Okay. I will accept that then. It's just when you had said, oh, you know, I'm playing center, you already got Nick Bonino off the team. So let's see. You've traded Lack. You've lost Markstrom. Bonino's gone. Change is continuing.
Change is always continuing. That'll be the new slogan for 2015.
Next year, change is continuing.
The other question I want to bring up to you guys, we've discussed defense pairings a little bit, but we saw Dan Hamhuis paired with Kevin Bieksa once again. We didn't see that a whole lot last year, mind you. Is this a reunion that's going to last forever for the season, at least?
I think it has to. I think the only reason that Tortorella moved away from that is that Tortorella was really
stupid.
Mixing things up. Well, okay, you can say that he was stupid, but I think he was simply mixing things up. The problem is then you had the Bieksa-Edler pairing.
Yikes. Which was not so good.
Well, you get casual Kev, and you get very casual Edler, who still, I feel, with what's all going on, there's something going on.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of inconsistency. It's like, let's go and pair Chris Tanev with, you know, Willie Mitchell. You got two defensive stalwarts, no offense whatsoever. And I'm a big Chris Tanev fan. But that kid's not meant to score many goals.
So let's assume that Bieksa is back with his security blanket, Dan Hamhuis. You like that, by the way? Who does that leave as your second pairing? Alex Edler and
Chris Tanev?
And you're okay with that?
Well, I have no problem with Chris Tanev. I think Chris Tanev is defensively smart, and that allows Edler to have a little more freedom to get back to what his bread and butter is, and that's actually shooting the puck. And let's say Edler makes a mistake. Tanev skates around the ice with that cigarette in his mouth because he is so calm, cool, and collected.
And how about Tanev on that 1-3-1 power play, just kind of loading up the back?
Does that scare anyone right now?
Well, actually, it doesn't scare me from a defensive got to get back or make a smart
that
move.
That doesn't scare
no,
me.
No, it's the fact that his hardest shot is a wrist shot, basically.
Are we going to just let his little muffin shot, and this is coming from a guy who doesn't exactly have a grade A point shot either, but this is a guy who we're going to trust to be your power play quarterback?
Pew, pew.
I think this is just an experiment.
Yeah,
probably.
Obviously, because Edler was injured.
And Clay is obviously being over-optimistic once again.
About what?
I thought you were the optimistic one around here.
I'll bring up the optimism for the second half, I promise.
That was another drop there, by the way.
He just loves setting these things up today, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he records everything. You don't know you're actually being recorded, but you are.
Okay, I better not go to the bathroom after this.
Flush.
That's going to be in next week now. The other thing I want to bring up, Ryan Stenn certainly endeared himself to us last year as a fifth defenseman. Let's assume he starts in the top six again. So that leaves Yannick Weber, Frank Corrado, and Lucas Spisa to duke it out. So which of those two or which of those three should you like more?
Lucas Spisa.
Agreed.
Really?
Are you going to put $2.1 million upstairs?
Haven't you heard the way Spisa's been talking? He's been waiting for this opportunity. He's trying to help Vancouver fans forget about number 17.
That's what he said?
No, I said that part, last part, yeah.
Is he wearing number 17?
No.
Vervada's wearing 17.
No, I know. Guys. I'm
the guy who left.
Yeah, I get that. Oh, okay.
We're not
see.
Supposed to say the name.
That's why. Yeah, see, I listen. Yeah. Okay. So anyway,
thank you, Clay.
I think he's on the bottom. Not the bottom. I think he's on the third pairing with Ryan Stenn, for sure.
Okay. I don't dispute that a little bit, but here's my beef with that. Spisa, not an offensive guy. Dan Hamhuis, not an offensive guy. Kevin Bieksa, not an offensive guy. Chris Tanev, definitely not an offensive guy.
Matt Lee, very offensive guy.
Okay, I'm going to offend everybody if I have to.
No, I'm going to actually disagree. I'd say Kevin Bieksa's got offense in him. Now, is he truly, purely offensive? No, but that's a guy who has no problem actually skating end-to-end.
I don't know. I mean, here's my thing. I think Yannick Weber, the point I'm getting at is that Yannick Weber is a good power play guy. He's got a good shot, and I think he can find his way to the net on the power play, and I think that's why he should get some sort of look, at least in a power play specialist kind of role.
And who said Weber Spisa? Me. When we were talking about our
So you
our
have
team,
Weber and Spisa. Mm-hmm. Where do you have Ryan Stanton?
On the pine upstairs.
What?
Press box, looking on, just to determine when he might fit into
Ryan
the
Ryan Stanton, in my mind, is like a Chris Tanev light.
Okay, sure. So let's go back to last year. The reason the Canucks bottom fell out was Ryan Stanton got hurt.
Yeah. Okay, fine. No, it wasn't, but...
Like, the train had not come off the rails until Ryan Stanton, the stalwart of that organization, was hurt.
No, it contributed.
What we said last year was that Mike Santarelli getting injured was when the train started to stop. But anyway...
When Ryan Stanton, you know, got
that's
hurt,
that's when
the train
it
exploded.
Really came off the tracks.
That's right.
I don't know. I mean, we can debate all we want. I mean, we are ultimately debating over who should be on the third pairing. That really tells you how badly we need regular season hockey to come back, by the way. But for my money, it will be Yannick Weber and Ryan Stanton on the third pairing.
Uh-huh.
I guess we agree to disagree.
I will bet you a dollar.
I'm the witness.
We got a loony on this. Start of the season.
I don't know.
First game.
I'm losing a lot of money with this Japan trip.
Matt, it's a buck.
You cover me then.
Fine, double or nothing.
Sorry, so...
I'm joking. I'll take you.
And I'll put in a buck too.
Okay, so what are you betting
though? That
means
we get both of the dollars.
I think Stanton and Spies are going to start the season.
Okay, so I only have a dollar in on this. So you guys are going to get 50 cents each and I'll win $2.
No, I'm making you a second bet.
I'm
saying Stanton Spisa.
Oh,
you're saying Spisa and...
Weber.
And you? I'm saying Weber and Stanton.
Okay.
So we all have different.
We all have a different
pairing. Let's all put up a buck then.
We'll all put up a buck.
Winner takes two.
God, we are so cheap, by the way.
Okay, do you want to make it $2?
Fine. I'll raise you $5.
Okay, let's do $5.
$5.
Board. We do not advocate gambling here on Canucks Hockey Blog, but for this case, we do.
All right, let's make another. Okay, we don't have to bet money on this one, but. At what point do you think Jacob Markstrom gets recalled?
Doesn't.
No? You think he gets the shaft?
Unless Slack or Miller gets hurt, he's down in Utica.
I agree.
All right. We're going to take another 30-second timeout, but then we're going to come back, and we're going to do a little Ask CHB and a little Haiku Corner.
It's time for Ask CHB.
Here we are at my favorite part of every CHB episode, and it's been missing for the last while, just like Clayton Nemo has been from the studio. But Ask CHB is where we reach out to you, our listeners, the thousands and thousands of you that tune into our podcast each and every week, and we ask you a question just to get you involved in our podcast a little more. Well, today's question is actually quite apropos. We were talking about the preseason, and we wanted to know, halfway through it, which Canucks player has impressed you the most, and who has left you feeling a little bit let down? Well, guys, it seems to be a consensus pick here. There is one player that has impressed many of our listeners. His name is Lyndon. I'm not talking about Trevor. I'm talking about Lyndon Vay. That's right. We have on Facebook, our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog, John Loftus tells us one word, Vay. We go to Twitter, and we have Fantasy Hockey Tips, who is at Hockey Pool Tips, says Lyndon Vay, but he also goes on to say, Hunter Shinkerick, most impressive, but he tells us, Cassian, most disappointing thus far. Matthew.
I'll agree on Vay. That's why I have him as my second line right winger right now.
Well, Gary D, who is at Canuckaduck, he agrees on Vay too. But Cassian, this is your boy.
This is the guy who I predicted would have a sort of breakout season. So I'm a little bit surprised. We already know that he's battling some sort of reoccurring nagging injury right now. So I want to give Cassian the benefit of the doubt there. But Vay has been impressive. I've also liked Hunter Shinkerick. And I think that Bo Horvat has done enough, like we've talked about ad nauseum now, to impress us.
Well, it's funny you mention Shinkerick, because we've obviously heard from one person on Twitter that Shinkerick's been impressive. But Daniel, who is at Danzig247, says Shinkerick have impressed me the most. Jensen, too. Probably Canucks give Jensen a spot. I think Shinky will start in Utica. He calls him Shinky. It's kind of interesting.
That's a thing.
I guess so. But the other...
My brother calls him Hush. Like Hush? H-U and S-H, Hunter Shinkerick.
Hush. Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that. But JS, who is at Jagdeeper, says Cassian is very quiet so far, but it's super early. The Canucks' power play looks strong.
Yeah, it's too early. Mm. He's making that based on the Calgary game, I assume, so...
And last but not least, Edmund Yan, who on Facebook told us, from what he's seen, Nick Bonino has been pretty awesome.
We talked about this last week. Pierre McGuire had a lot of high praise for Nick Bonino, didn't he?
He did. And I, you know my feelings on Mr. McGuire, but I don't have anything to say against Bonino. If Pierre's seen a lot of him and says that he's a very intellectual, very cerebral player, I'll go with it.
All right. You want to thank the listeners for the contributions?
I always thank the listeners. I thank them by sharing their thoughts.
Let's get into Clay's Haiku Corner.
Garth. That was a haiku.
I am happy to be back with my favorite part of the podcast. And yes, this has been gone for a couple months, but we are back with a bang, and I have two from our listeners. And these are haikus. These are the power of the 575 Japanese poetry, and very appropriate giving that our esteemed producer, Matt Lee, is indeed going to Japan.
If I find a haiku, I'm going to be thinking about you the whole time.
Don't just think about us. Bring it back for your first podcast back. So... Okay. Both of these, as always, Chris and Matt would love your instant reaction. Don Falconer, at The Falconer, he says, they said change would come. That change now certainly has. But will they be good? Chris, instant reaction. Will they be good?
I don't know.
Did he say they or they?
No, they. T-H-E-Y.
Oh, okay. I'm less interested.
But will they be good?
They could be good.
Okay, let's go with that. And then Shoe Thief at Stuck on the Sofa, a regular listener. We know this because she actually references something, Chris, that you've been talking about for the last 2 months. You ready for this?
I am waiting.
Here we go. Meat and potatoes.
Yum.
Will that sell season tickets? Only time will tell. And how do we know that she listens to us?
Well, I continue to reference meat and potatoes to the point that Matt seems to think that that's all I eat. And I'm maybe stretching it here. I'm hoping...
You gotta eat your veggies.
Yeah, well, that's my potatoes. I get carbs and veggies all in one. But no, I actually think as long as meat and potatoes produces, Season ticket holders will come back in droves. Hey, the Keg sells meat and potatoes, and they're very popular on a Friday night.
Yet, what we saw this week is that the Canucks are now releasing these five-game packs. So they went from seasons to 11-gamers to five-gamers. So we'll see what happens when we'll see what the crowds are like when the season starts. I obviously want them to do well, but I think it's going to take a bit of time.
Wow, Clay's turned half empty.
Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. And as always, when we record one of these and I'm around, we ask for your best Japanese poetry in the form of a haiku.
So here we are, boys, at the end of another episode. Episode 25, our silver anniversary episode, and we all reunite in the control room. Now, I'm thinking we talked about quite a lot. How you feeling there, Matt?
I'm going to miss you Jamokes when I'm in Japan, but whatever.
You're not going to miss us.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I bet you probably won't even listen to the podcast because you're going to just assume it's not good enough for you to listen to. That's right. You shake your head in there. You just shake your head.
I always shake my head. I'll shake my head as much as I want to.
That's okay, because the thousands of listeners who do listen, they truly appreciate the genius of Chris and Clay.
Do they really say the genius?
Yeah. In fact, our comments on iTunes say the genius. Greenfield Wife of Gold. I don't know who that is.
Wait a minute. That means Marnie.
Anyway, Matt, have a great trip. We will miss you. Chris, I look forward to seeing whoever we're working with the next one, but whoever it is, I'm sure he'll be great, or she will be great.
You do realize we still have one more episode. Like, it's not quite closing time. It's more like last call.
Oh, so like it's the penultimate episode, not the ultimate episode.
The penultimate episode before Mr. Lee goes on vacation.
Okay. Closing time. I take it back then.
It's closing time, guys.
Well, being that it's the end of our episode and we've all got our final words in, I think I'm going to sign off on our behalf. So, as always, I am Chris Golden at Lightforce on Twitter, joined by Clay Emo at Canuck Clay, Matt Lee at MattLee980. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/CanucksHockey, Facebook, facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog, and as always, at our regular place, CanucksHockeyBlog.com. With that, we're out. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay.